Dan in Warwick, what's up, Dan?
Hey, Mike. I just got a question about the Giants. In your years of experience, have you ever seen, how the San Francisco Giants or once the New York Giants, has there ever been either a franchise-to-franchise or maybe even player-to-player get-together when San Francisco comes to New York? Like, do they ever say hi, maybe, I don't know, go out to dinner or something?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Is there ever any interaction when the San Francisco Giants come to New York or vice versa?
The San Francisco Giants come to New York and do what?
Have a game.
They play against the Mets, and what do you want to happen now?
Do the New York Giants ever reach out to them, either the players or the franchises?
The football Giants?
Yeah, the football Giants.
Well, what is the connection between the San Francisco Giants and the football Giants?
Well, they used to be in New York, and they got the same name.
Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got to hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's going to ever keep you down. You're the best.
The mic thing. So... Do you think they get together? Mike Francesa goes on in that clip.
Yeah, I do. In fact, I think Madison Bumgarner and Odell Beckham are just going out and hitting the town together.
Mike Francesa goes on in that clip to say, you know what else? It takes him a while to think of it, but he starts making bad jokes, and then he's like, yeah, the Rangers and the Texas Rangers get together too.
And the Tigers, and then all the other Tigers, and the teams that call themselves the Bears.
And then all the birds get together. Dimitri Martin has funny stand-up. He's like, I'm not a sports fan, but I like to picture the real things fighting each other. And he's like, Colts, Bears, awesome. Like, Tigers, Lions, sweet. Jazz and the Wizards, a little gay.
Yeah.
So it's Cap Figure Podcast, episode 35. I'm Ryan DePaulo. Who are you?
Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Tom. You know, maybe one day I'll just start doing it to mess with you. The show I watched on cinema at the cinema I showed you, like the Adult Swim, the game is that every episode he's like, and today my guest host is, and he's the co-host, the other guy, and he gets mad. But every episode he's his special guest host. So who are some number 35s, Tom?
So the player to wear 35 the longest, as well as accumulating the highest WAR in his career, is Phil Niekro, the knuckleballer. Great player in MLB The Show.
Yeah.
Can't hit it.
Easy to get because you need to get every player on the Braves.
and they were not good.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman was maybe a little bit hard to get, but that's it.
So a couple other notable 35s. You got Frank Thomas, Mike Mussina, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Cole Hamels and Justin Verlander.
Oh.
You know what's interesting here? Like, I'm looking at this. So Cole Hamels and Justin Verlander have both played 11 years, and Hamels actually has a better WAR by one game. It's 51 to 50.
That's really surprising. I guess it's because of, like, before this last year, all the consistently, like, Cole Hamels has just been a consistent B-minus pitcher at worst every year, right?
Yeah, and Verlander has more variance,
right?
You know,
I wouldn't have guessed that, though. I would have guessed that Verlander's retardedly good years would make up for that. That is a really interesting, what a fun fact there, Tom. That was good.
I know, that's why I'm a visionary.
Well, this is how I visioned my Twitter horrible stats being all fun facts, but like that are horrible. But
that's not a horrible stat, though.
No, that's a good one.
I mean, you should make like what, really
no,
good
dingy
stats?
I mean, stupid fun facts, like Effectively Wild before it was bad made fun of. You know, it's only the good one is gone. He left the show.
The guy with the terrible voice.
Yeah. He hosts it with another guy now.
Will.
Yo, they struggled in one of the last episodes together. They were talking about Mike Trout or something, like if they think that he will make over or under $400 million. And the good one, I forget, Sam and Ben, one or the other, but
Ben is the bad one.
Ben is the bad one?
Yeah.
So Sam let Ben sit there, and I knew Sam was just letting him go to like make watch him squirm and not bailing him out. He let Ben go for literally the worst 4 minutes of a podcast I've ever heard and just go, well, I think he could get more, but then again, maybe teams would be scared.
That's always what it is. He says one thing and then says exactly the opposite.
He has no hot takes. He has no, like, strong opinions. And then he'll throw it to him. Sam will throw it to him, and Ben will be like, yeah, well, I don't know. We'll see. It's like you're being a hole. Like, you got to progress the conversation. Don't be a black hole.
It's amazing, too, because all of the – literally the great talents I see and hear people, like, on Twitter and all different forms of media – you know, there's probably 100 baseball commentators for every one that makes it onto, like, MLB Now once. And that kid has literally been on MLB Now, like, 25 times in the past year and is, like, you know, being praised as, like, the next Tom Verducci. And he literally doesn't say anything. He just says, oh, well, maybe I'll walk outside and maybe it'll be hot. But then again, you know, maybe the sun will go down. And it's like, yeah, no shit. Like, yes. If something can happen, and if it doesn't happen, right. Then it doesn't.
He's like, well, Pagoda projections think that Bryce Harper will be not good, but maybe he could be good.
it's like,
we saw a breakout. I don't know. It's like, well, what do you think's going to happen? I could see either way. Like, you know, and then it's whatever. So anyway, I hope Sam does his own show. I haven't checked if he's going to. I tweeted him saying, I was like, I loved watching you watch Mike Trout, let him squirm on the Mike Trout point. He didn't get back to me. He may have blocked me. I didn't check if he blocked me or not, but because he knows. It didn't sound like, yeah, he definitely knows. And just for PR, he's probably laughing that he saw that tweet. So anyway, so today we're continuing our MLB look at. Last episode we looked at the Dodgers. This episode we're looking at the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, who are not like New York Giants, as Mike Francesa clearly pointed out. And so yeah, Tom, what's good? What was their story of their last season or last few? If you don't have it, I'll ramble.
I do have it, actually. So last year, 87 and 75, they won the wild card game against your beloved New York Mets. The year before that, 84 and 78. Year before that, 88 and 74. So last 3 years, they've made it to the wild card game.
And they won a World Series.
And yes, they won a World Series. They, you know, there was the whole thing about the even years because they won in, what was it?
10, 12, and 14.
Yeah, 10, 12, and 14. So, you know, we did the Dodgers last week, and the Dodgers have won the NL West 4 years in a row. But somehow the Giants always find a way to get, you know, let's say 5 or 6 games above, you know, the 500 mark. They make it in, and then they just have a solid team all around. They can hit. They can put the ball in play. They have now, I think they have probably the best starting pitching staff outside of the Mets in the major leagues.
Absolutely. And even in some ways more you could say they are better because you know maybe more what you're going to get because with Matt Harvey being injured or Steven Matt, you know, they're young, but the Mets,
I just didn't want you to get your panties all in a bunch. So
well, thank you for worrying about my panties. I appreciate it, but they're all right. You know, yeah, I mean, the Cueto deal. Anyway, but last year the story of the Giants season was that they were killing it. The Samardzija and Johnny Cueto big deals they made in the offseason both looked to work out. They still do today. But the team, because of their bullpen down the stretch, they just lost their division lead, which they had by a lot of games halfway through the season. I don't remember what it was, but
they had an absolute meltdown. I think they were playing like 300 baseball for most of the second half of the season, which is generally the opposite story of what happens with this team. You know, usually they're like a couple of games under 500 and then they play like 750 baseball down the stretch.
And their bullpen blew a lot of games, which we've talked about, which is funny, that their bullpen is what blew them because I'm familiar with so many guys in their bullpen, like Sergio Romo and Derek Law. I was telling you, I happened to watch his first start. Derek Law, by the way, his dad spent one day in the majors and he didn't even get in the game. It was a doubleheader and that was it. And so I was telling Tom, I watched every time I'd put on baseball late at night on the package, they would be on and I'd watch him pitch. And he looks a little goofy, but he has a good curveball. Anyway, but Hunter Strickland could throw 100.
His dad was he part of both games of the doubleheader or just one of them?
Like, I don't even know. That's a good question. He may have only been part of one of them because they were going to arrest guys.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, doesn't that suck?
It's like, actually, you wait outside the clubhouse. Once the first game is over, we'll bring you in. You can just sit on the bench and then we'll send you right back down.
But don't put your uniform on. You have to wait in the waiting room. Like,
yeah.
You're not allowed to get dressed before the second game starts.
But yeah, so you're saying too, like Hunter Strickland, 1 year of service time, so he's still 5 years at below market value. He can throw 100 when he's on. He's, you know, a pretty solid eighth inning guy, even borderline like a MLB level closer.
It's funny that was their Achilles heel, but it was. And then, but anyway, they still ended up having a good year, right? Because even though they needed to address that, and they did with Mark Melanson, which we'll get to in a minute this offseason, they still won the wild card game against the Mets. Connor Gillespie looks like a junkie, you know, hit a home run off Familia. And then people thought after they won, they were down 2-0, I believe, against the Cubs, and then they won game 3. Then game 4, they had a lead, right? And people, including you and I, were both like, I think I bet on them to win the World Series at that point or something.
I remember sending you a text during the one game where, like, the Cubs were up, and then the Giants, like, all of a sudden in, like, the span of 2 outs, came back, took the lead, clutch hits, and I was like, look, the Giants are going to win this year.
Yeah, that was game 3.
Absolutely.
Game 3 was in a crazy comeback. I stopped watching, actually, that game. I was so mad. And then game 4, their bullpen, they went through, like, 7 pitchers in an inning. They couldn't get the last couple outs.
Yep.
And the Cubs came back and won in San Francisco, and they avoided having to go back to Chicago game 5 with all the pressure of this 100-win team blowing it.
Yep.
But it was the same story as their season, the Giants, again, and we'll move on to this offseason, but their pitchers, their starting pitchers pitched well enough for them to win, and their bullpen didn't do that well, and their offense was okay.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is this team is... You know, it's like they're so solid at every position. And, you know, Buster Posey, I would consider like the true superstar offensively, given what he does comparatively to other good defensive catchers. That's, you know, I would say the player that produces the most incremental value offensively. So I view him as a superstar. But outside of that, you know, you look through the lineup and you just have all really good players.
Right. And that is, we kind of talked about this last time with the Dodgers. This is another large payroll team. That is a formula to win. Clearly, they've won 3 World Series, you know, and it's very desirable. But I guess it is funny that, like, a team with this much success doesn't have a crazy, like, a 35 home run guy or anything like that. You know, Brandon Crawford, whatever. I mean, so, all right, wait, so let's go. You get to this offseason. You just blew it because of your bullpen. We just described the story of their season. Obviously, that's what needs to be addressed. Everybody in the world knows it, and we discussed this. The 3 major closers that were on the market in the offseason were Aroldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen, and Mark Melanson. We made the point that, and for those who don't know, obviously the Giants have the most extreme pitcher park in baseball, them and the Marlins. And so I was said, you know, we came to, given that you could save the money on somebody like Mark Melanson, who pitches to contact maybe more than the other Chapman. 2 guys strike out, and get away with it. And that's exactly what they did. They signed Melanson. Is that what you would have addressed first? I mean, I think it's pretty clear cut.
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing, too, about the Giants that I think sometimes we take for granted, is they just seem to make the obvious moves, right? Because Melanson, let's see, 4 years, $62 million, right? Chapman, I think, it was close to $100 million. Jansen was, you know, 5 years, $90 million, right? So those guys are great, but Melanson, with the size of this ballpark and the great defense behind him, I think it effectively will contribute to nearly the same value as those guys.
Right.
Right. And he has, and the huge thing was with their bullpen, right? They had this sort of high volatility, right? When they were in the first half of the season, they were able to piece together whoever was hot, like Casilla or Romo. When they would get on a streak, they would be the closer. They would shut it down, and they would win games. Second half of the year, it was, you know, much more of like a high volatility. You know, they would have Romo, who would do good one game, then he would blow 2 in a row, and they just kept moving people around. And to me, Melanson, out of those 3, is effectively like the safest bet. Like, you pretty much know what you're going to get almost every single night. It's not like he has these extreme velocity or movement pitches.
Right.
He just hits his spots. He knows how to get weak contact. And defense is the most consistent thing game to game for baseball players. So, you know, you're taking what was a highly volatile position of closer and you're just putting the ultimate like band-aid on that. So I think that move just makes so much sense. And I think he will be like maybe the best offseason signing other than Encarnacion to the
Indians.
I would
agree. He could definitely, he's probably going to be the highest win probability added player, right?
Yes.
And also, you know, yeah, you touched on it, but they have the best defensive shortstop probably in baseball in Brandon Crawford. And now they have a ex-shortstop in Nunes playing third base. Panic's good enough. And they have Buster Posey, obviously. You know, their whole infield is very likable. Their outfield, they got Hunter Pence. But anyway, so I don't think, like we just said, like we were just discussing, you come into this offseason, I'm with you. All I would feel I need to address, especially given the payroll is now at $185 million, all I would want to address is the bullpen, because I think if they had a good enough bullpen or the bullpen was performing well, they could easily have won a World Series again, given their starters. They traded for Matt Moore, who pitched really well in the game against the Cubs and was a good deal. It seems to be. I mean,
yeah, no, he's a very solid pitcher. I mean, if he pitched for the Yankees, you can make the argument that he would be their number two starter.
If they didn't get Nunez, though, then that deal wouldn't have made sense.
Right.
But they did. They did replace their third baseman, Danny Duffy.
Matt Duffy.
Matt Duffy. I keep forgetting his name. Matt Duffy. Who looked like they all have like white guys. They have their players all look like comic book nerds, like skinny, dorky looking white guys like me. Like, I feel like
Brandon
I should
Belt.
Be on the Giants. Brandon Belt. He looks like Matt Stone from South Park. Like,
yep.
He had a breakout year. He made an All-Star game, I think, for the first or second time.
Buster Posey looks like he's like an Ivy League student. Like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
just
Buster
has
Posey
that like,
looks so
classic like WASP white person.
He
look.
So
yeah.
looks WASPy. Brandon Crawford looks trailer trash, but still white.
Yeah, the Jerry curls kind of.
Oh my God, his hair. Panic looks like dorky, you know, like but so that, I mean, that's not really important analysis, but Pence also is a maniac. Pence does so much meth or something. I don't understand how nobody catches him. You know, I forget how old he is too, given his energy in the field. He's like 35 and I forget that he's been around forever.
34. Yeah, I mean, he's played on a lot of good teams too. Philly. He played on those championship years. He went to the Giants, I think, in the middle of the 2012 season. So he won in 12 and 14. And then I think he was even in the Astros when he first came up.
Yeah, he was.
On like the teams with Beltran.
Oh,
back
yeah.
In the
oh,
day.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. He might have been on those teams.
Like,
yeah.
Bagwell, Biggio.
That may have been too
Andy
long ago,
Pettit.
But close.
So, yeah, I think, you know, the one other thing you kind of mentioned was like last offseason. Not last offseason. Last year at the trade deadline, they consciously did not trade for like someone like Chapman or Miller, and it ended up kind of biting them. But
last year it bit them.
Right, but if you remember, like the market was astronomical for those players.
Right.
So waiting this offseason to get Melanson, I mean, it was a calculated bet, and I still agree that they made the right decision, because the reality is with a team like the Giants, and I think you're starting to see this with the Dodgers now too, is like, you know, the Giants built with a very strong farm system, you know, Belt, Crawford, Panic, obviously Posey, but when you have this sustained success, you know, you can't really keep restocking like the farm system at a rapid rate. So when you look at the Giants right now, right, they have one prospect in the top 100 lists who's a shortstop playing at AA.
So money, and especially when you have a big enough payroll, right? I'm sure this is where you're going, is that money, not chips, is your biggest asset.
Right.
When you're that franchise, it is so much more makes sense for you to be just spending money because you have that and other teams don't. And that's what they did the last 2 years because they signed Cueto and Samardzija in the last offseason.
Exactly.
They're such a well-run team. I mean, they're so likable. All these players, we were looking at their contracts, like Brandon Belt. They bought out some of his free agent years at a cheaper rate. He's under his contract for $16 million. Just had another step and breakout ish year again at 29 or 30.
He always adds something every season too. Like he seems to come into every single year and he just gets better at something.
Yeah.
You know, like in 2015, I think the story coming in was like he was very good defensively, but when he was like throwing on the run, he was very inaccurate and would make, you know, these like ridiculous errors on plays that were somewhat simplistic, but you know, he worked through that. Obviously his hitting has just taken off. He added sort of a bit of power this last season. So, you know, you have to like sort of the trajectory of a player like that. He could come back this year and be even better.
Hell yeah. And also, especially you would want a good defensive first baseman in a stadium like that, you know, versus just a slugger who's not that good at defense. He suits the team. Again, Brandon Crawford is great. He's a left-handed hitter, hits well enough, awesome defensively.
That's a great point.
Joe Panic.
You know, a line drive down the line, first base, especially with the bullpen being on the field on the right side, if you hit like a line drive right on first base, it's a triple.
Right. So, there was an article I was telling you before the show that I saw. It had Brandon Belt's spray chart over the last couple seasons or whatever, and it was just expressing how severe the home run disadvantage is in the Giants in AT&T Park or whatever it's called now. Is that still what it's called?
AT&T Park.
AT&T Chevron Coke Park.
Yeah, and
Giant
they have,
Glove.
They have that like there's like this big cutout of like a car for Chevron somewhere in the field.
With
it's
goofy
like,
eyes. And
yeah,
like
exactly.
Face.
It does.
So
it has
looking.
Goofy eyes.
The stadium is so beautiful, like the architecture, and then it has this stupid cartoon, like that movie with Lindsay Lohan.
Or
Cars, but then it was like Furby or whatever the hell. Anyway,
Herbie Fully Loaded.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, Herbie. And it was just saying that it showed like 10 balls over the last couple of years that he hit for extra bases that would have been a home run. So anyway, so we got like a little bit of minutes left. Let's talk about some other things. The Giants, they have a lot of Asian fans. What are they going to do to address that? No, I'm kidding. I thought it's crazy that they have such a disadvantage with home runs because I thought when I was first started to be aware of baseball that it was like Yankee Stadium with McCovey Cove because of Barry Bonds, because every time there were people kayaking. So crazy to think that there were like 25 people kayaking in the water waiting for him to hit a home run at home games. Like imagine sitting in a boat for 2.5 hours, but you probably have a chance at a ball.
And I think people that have not been to that park, I haven't been to AT&T Park, but I went to a game at Candlestick and it was the middle of July. It was like 95 degrees during the day. And then at night, Candlestick is right by where the current field is, literally right on the water at night.
Candlestick was their old field and the old San Francisco 49ers field stadium.
The wind is so bad that I had to have a winter coat on with a blanket and we had to leave early because it gets so cold there.
Not really?
And the thing about that too is the wind always comes in off the water and the humidity from being right on the water is why it's, you know, such a disadvantage to hit there. The ball, when you're talking about gravity, right, like dry heat, the ball travels so much quicker through that. So there's, you know, a lot more resistance when you're hitting in San Francisco. The thing you were saying about McCovey Cove, you know, they have that kind of counter that I guess counts every time someone hits in there.
Mm-hmm.
We should have looked up, but I will after this, the stats of like how many happened with Barry Bonds and then since then, because I feel like he probably makes up more than half of those home runs.
See if you could look it up right now. See if you could search it. McCovey Cove homers. So I wanted to bring up also, for those who don't know, Tom is a very big Madison Bumgarner fan. He, many of his usernames around the internet are Mad Bum. He pretty much loves the guy. But here's the thing. Madison Bumgarner is from a town where something like more than half of the people in the town have the last name of Bumgarner. It's a very inbred town. He dated a girl in high school named Madison Bumgarner. That's how inbred it is. Very severe problem there. Therefore, the doctor said his life expectancy is only to be 29. He doesn't have much longer to perform well, you know, before his limbs start growing all sideways and stuff, given his inbredness. So, I mean, does that concern you?
No.
You still think he's too good?
Yeah.
He's an innings eater. He'll persevere.
He is literally Paul Bunyan, and I mean, look at the guy. Like, he physically built, and there's no pitcher. Like, he is a...
If you dropped every pitcher in baseball in, like, the middle of, like, the woods in, like, Montana in the summer, and you're, like, survive, 95% would just, like, cry themselves and die because they're all pussies and they need jackets while they run the bases. Then he would build the shelter for the remaining 5% single-handedly, ask them to go hunt. They would go fail, come back with nothing, and then he'd go do it himself. He's a gangster.
You know, it's amazing because he's obviously not the same talent that Randy Johnson was, but there's so much similarity watching them pitch.
Just a giant, scary left-hander.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, from a physical standpoint, I mean, Bumgarner is built, like, to last much more than Johnson was, right? Because Johnson was very thin. He had, not that sturdy of a lower half. Madison Bumgarner, like, his thighs are probably the size of my waist. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that guy is consistently underrated when you talk about the best pitchers in baseball. I know you have this kind of thing where you don't like players that eat up innings, and I totally feel that, but he is as consistent as they come.
Yeah, I mean, I'm joking. I don't mean that as any slight with him. He is so good. The fact that he goes 8 innings and he's amazing. I don't get me wrong. And he's still so young. He's what, 26?
Yeah.
So you got the Barry Bonds number?
I do, and actually it was dead on. So as of August 21st, 2016, 71 splash hits have been hit into McCovey Cove by Giants players since the park opened.
Which could only be home runs for those who don't know, whatever. Those are
right,
all home
yeah,
runs.
This is not foul balls hit into the water. So 35 of those were by Barry Bonds.
35, so yeah. Half, literally.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I wonder how much those
he
balls...
He hasn't played in like 7 or 8 years.
I know,
like...
that's ridiculous. I wonder how you authenticate like the ball, like if you get it. There was a guy walking by. I remember, I think it might have been in one of their playoff games with the Cubs. He just jumped in the water to get a ball. I wonder if that's leftover from Barry Bonds, because I'm not sure on eBay that a random Hunter Pence NLDS home run ball is going for more than – like you ruined your iPhone, jump in the water to get a random Hunter Pence ball.
But no, wait, that's not worth it.
Yeah, no, hell no. And you're wet the rest of the day.
No, there are very – like the sports memorabilia market, like – you know, you hear these stories of like the guy who caught Alex Rodriguez's like 3,000 hit, that home run, that douche who goes around catching fly balls, and you hear like this ridiculous price tag, but you know, there's maybe like one home run ball every 2 years that is worth any substantial amount of money.
Right.
Like maybe Kyle Schwarber's home run that he hit off of like the top of the scoreboard, what is this, like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
That might be worth something.
Right. Or some iconic homers or something. Yeah. Or obviously any of Barry Bonds. Or Jeter. You know, it's crazy. He described that kid. We might have talked about him
Zach
on the show.
Zach Campbell, I think
but
his name
I
is.
I watched YouTube videos of him. He, like, has these guides on how to get balls. He writes books. He's, like, he's like an unemployed 29-year-old who goes around. And most of the balls he gets, he said, I've gotten this many balls, is, like, before in batting practice. He runs up to the bat boys.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, give me a ball. But he's smart. But anyway, so he described that after he caught it, that the Yankees people are like, come on, let's go, we'll go authenticate it for you. And obviously you need to go authenticate it. But he said right away they start in with
negotiating
and peer pressuring you, and they separate you from whoever you're with, and that you go in the back alley, right? And then it's like, oh, here's Reggie Jackson saying, oh, you're going to do the right thing? Like, literally, it wasn't that big of a star, but he said there was an ex-player, as soon as he walked in the hallway, being like, oh, hey, are you the guy going to give back A-Rod's ball? Then they just sit him in an interrogation room for, like, basically, and they're like, all right, we'll be right back. Then somebody comes in, talks to him again, and then somebody else is like, Alex, would love to meet you and just discuss it.
Good cop, bad cop.
Like, yeah. literally. And then he said he had to be like, guys, there is no way I'm not sleeping on it. Like, you need to. That's a smart strategy. But they would get to me if I caught a Mets one and they're back there and they're like, Noah Syndergaard would really think you're cool, Ryan, if you gave him this ball back. I'd be like, oh, really? Okay, he could have it for free. Like the Jeter kid who caught the Jeter ball said all he wanted was season tickets and some like signed thing by Jeter. He totally got swindled.
I would take them to I would take them to the cleaners. I would want like Yankees tickets for life.
Yeah, man.
But one other story is that guy. His name is, I think, Zach Hample, who catches all those fly balls. Remember last year, there was a game the Marlins played in on a military site in North Carolina, Fort Bragg. It was on July 4th. Only military personnel were like allowed to go into this game, and somehow he put these posts on Craigslist and got some female like military personnel to invite him as his date, and he kept posting all this stuff online. You know, it's kind of that's a little bit like not the right thing to do. So the Marlins man just started tearing him apart on social media, like, give that ball back, like, leave right now. You're, like, a total disgrace to this country.
The guy, Zach, got in and caught one?
He went, like, 3 hours early, and Martin Prado, like, threw him a ball. And he's, like, posting it all on media, social media and stuff. And the Marlins guy under every post is, like, you're a disgrace to this country.
Oh,
like, leave immediately.
Dude, those are the two highest profile baseball fans right now having beef.
Marlins man has my support 100%.
Dude, the Marlins man Zach beef. We got to keep track of that. We'll update you guys. That's some serious beef. That's fan-on-fan hate crimes.
Marlins man is the best, though. He should just rename himself. Man.
The man.
Yeah.
Yo, last thing, we're about done, but I just wanted to say, Madison Bumgarner, you know, now that you're reminding me about how big he is and strong, I guess it makes sense that he chose a wife who could sustain those type of aggressions in the bedroom, right? Because if he had a skinny or even a good-looking wife, she wouldn't survive. You know, he's too much of a man.
Yep.
No comment on his wife's arms?
No, I mean, that's probably about right.
His thigh is the size of your waist, and his wife's arms are the size of your waist.
There is this... So I also read this article about him. When he was drafted, he was obviously taken from, like, you know, Hick, North Carolina, and he was sent off... I forget exactly where it was, but it was somewhere still in the middle of America, and there was a horse statue about a mile down outside of the mall in the like little town he was staying at. And he said that he would get so like homesick that he would bring his lasso over to the mall, stand outside the mall and practice like roping the lasso of the horse. And he said the first time he saw a plane go over his head, he said he had no idea what it was.
Oh my God. Dude, I didn't even know there were places like that in North Carolina, let alone the United States. That is awesome. He, what was it? What was I going to say? He's like, Jesus, I've totally forgot. He could probably chop wood, though, without an axe. Like,
the other story is...
Oh, he's going to come in, we better stop. This is what I was going to say, is that, like, I totally picture him if we keep going. For those of you who've seen Braveheart, there's a scene where William Wallace rides in on a horse and into the noble's bedroom. He rides in on a horse, smashes the guy in the head with a mace while he's in his bed, and rides out. That's what Mad Bum is going
to
do. He's going
to you.
Haunt me in our dreams. Well, because I talked about his wife. I deserve it.
Oh, you do, yeah. The other story was, like, so he bought this farm, and he was there with his wife, and they watched a rattlesnake eat a mouse, and they eat them whole. So he picked up the rattlesnake, snapped it in half, cut it open, pulled the mouse out, and it was still alive.
Ha! That is so gangster. He's like, man, I want to see if that mouse still alive. What do you think, sweetheart? It's like, yeah, gotta go check it out. Like, with no, like, fear that, like, you're going to get killed by a rattlesnake.
It's unbelievable.
Or creeped out by a mouse. I would just run away. Even if I just saw a mouse without a rattlesnake around it, I'm running away.
And it's crazy. When they went to write that story, the baseball journalist who came to his house...
Who wrote it? Do you know? Where was it? Give him credit. And how long ago?
I don't. It was one of the MLB Network guys. This was after the Giants won in 2014. Mad Bum was named, like, Sports Illustrated Man of the Year. So it was probably Tom Verducci. Went to interview him. He had just signed a contract extension also. and he's like asking him all these questions, and all Mad Bum wanted to do was show him the new cow that he had won the day before at like a cattle auction. He's like, Bessie is the best cattle I've got. Like, I'm so lucky.
Dude, he's so funny. And we referenced Puig last episode. They're the opposites. He hates Puig. He gets too angry at him, but he's crazy. I love him.
That is very funny. Yeah. Like, they
troll the crap out of each other. It's amazing. And Mad Bum will even be in the wrong, but he's always in the right because he'll kill me more than Puig will. All right, so that'll do it.
That's enough tall tales.
That's enough tall tales for this week on Bumgarner Stories.
Maybe we can just change the narrative of this whole podcast to Mad Bum in charge.
Dude, I'll never be that interesting. Or growing up in New York City, I am just like, if he and I, again, like were in dropped in Montana and told to survive, I would just be in the fetal position crying, and somehow there'd be mascara on my face, I got perpetrated. All right, thank you guys. Or it would be like Brokeback Mountain, and we'd fall in love. All right, leave a review. Thank you.
Bye. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it.